Boy, it seemed for a while we didn't have very much illness that was directly affecting the congregation, and now all of a sudden it seems like we've got a lot. All right, just to remind everyone, if you have a handout, you may be blessed. Did we run out? We may be out of ammo there. Regardless, we're going to do the best we can this morning and talk about how to help others draw near to Jesus. And I just want to remind you what we are doing and what we're not doing with this. We're not talking about a particular method. We're not trying to give you some foolproof scheme here. We're also not interested in manipulating or pressuring anybody. I think all of us have seen evangelistic methods that tend to rely on some pressure and some manipulation. Those things are, in my mind, very, very bad and counterproductive, because even in the rare occasions when someone does agree to be baptized, very often they're not, in fact, converted. They're just trying to get you out of their lives, you know, for a little while. Faith comes by hearing. That's Romans 10:17. And we need to wait for faith to grow in people. They need to get all the facts that they need. They need to have any kind of objections that they have or questions answered. But we need to allow God time to work in their lives and bring faith to fruition. And as I said, we're not doing some kind of method that's going to have people racing you to the baptistry. We're not talking about a method, and we're not really talking about anything that's new or revolutionary. I am not the smartest guy in the world, or even someone close. I didn't even play him on television. So all I can tell you is things that have been seen, noticed, and worked in the past, particularly in the Scriptures, we see how these things come to work. What we are trying to do is move somebody one step closer. And we kind of had an unrealistic expectation for evangelistic work in the past, thinking that it has to be like some of those exciting and dramatic stories in the book of Acts, where Peter stands up and preaches and 3,000 people jump up and say, "I want to be baptized." And so we think that we have failed if we get the message out, but people don't immediately jump up and say, "I want to be baptized." That's not the case at all. People come to obedience in stages. You did, I did, I think everybody does. Sometimes we're not aware of the stages that we go through. But we go step by step by step, and for a little while we're far away from the Lord, and then we get closer and closer and closer and closer. Our task, our real goal in this, is to help someone move from step 3 to step 4. We don't have any idea how many steps there are out there before they come to obedience and faithfulness through their lives, but we want to just help them move from one step to the next step, get them a step closer, and we consider that we have done we've done the will of the Lord in that, and He will continue to move them and help them to grow. Evangelism really is a team effort. We're going to talk about the whole team concept in a couple, 3 weeks, and talk about... I kind of toyed with the titling that class, "How Many Christians Does It Take?" You know, like the old jokes. Just for a flash, I thought about telling a joke, and then I thought, skip it. all right, so let's keep all that stuff in the forefront of our minds, but I want to look at the impact of relationships in bringing someone to faith. Let's go to John and look at a couple of episodes. John does this very well. He helps us to see how one person draws another person to faith. Or helps that person move forward in faith. So we go back to John chapter 1 from the very beginning. Jesus begins His ministry, and then in verse 35, "The next day John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, 'Look, the Lamb of God!'" John has identified Jesus, knows very well who He is. "When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, 'What do you want?' They said, 'Rabbi,'" which means teacher, "'where are you staying?' 'Come,' he replied, 'and you will see.' So they went and saw where he was staying and spent that day with him." It was about the 10th hour. It was late in the day. It's about the 10th hour. "Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is, the Christ," and he brought him to Jesus. Isn't that interesting? First thing he did was go get his brother. We have an existing relationship there. These brothers, we presume that they are close, as many brothers are. They're both grown men. And so Andrew has had Jesus identified as the Messiah, and I'm going to point out in the sermon this morning, it's hard for us to realize the thrill of the word Messiah. Everything that that meant. It was like all the hopes and dreams came true right there in that one individual. And so Andrew has had Jesus identified as the Messiah, and the first thing he wants to do is get Peter involved in this too. This is big. This is really big. Okay, we skip on down verse 43, and a similar thing kind of happens in John chapter 1. Real similar. The next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth? Can anything good come from there?" Nathanael asked. "Come and see," said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, "Here's a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false." That's kind of a play on words in Aramaic. It doesn't translate into other languages well at all, but you have to remember that Jacob was first named Jacob because he was a heel grabber. You remember? He tripped people up and tricked them. And so Jesus is referring to an Israelite in whom there's nothing false. It's a word. Never mind. It was funny in the original. "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree, before Philip called you." Then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You're the King of Israel." It's all excited about it. Well, and he should be excited. It's an exciting thing. Skip on down to chapter 4. So we got Andrew. First thing he does is bring Peter. Philip sees Jesus and realizes who he is. First thing he does, go get Nathanael. You have this kind of excitement that leads people to want to share good news. We got something good happening. I don't know why we seem to have a delight in bad news. Have you ever noticed that? People just seem to love bad news. So they want to sit down and get into real juicy gossip and tell all the bad stuff that's going on and all the bad things that are going on in the world. They just can't wait to trumpet all the bad things. And once in a while, some really good news comes along, and they do it again. People start running around telling all the good news. This is exciting. So we go to John chapter 4. You know the story. You've got Jesus talking with the woman at the well. She's in Samaria. She is not a highly respected person. And they get into this long discussion, and you get to verse 28. Jesus has identified himself as the Messiah to her. In verse 28, "Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, 'Come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ?' And they came out of the town and made their way to him," or toward him. We got some good news. He claims to be the Christ, and wow, he knows everything I've ever done. What do you think? You want to see him? Skip on down to verse 39. "Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did." So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. And they said to the woman, "We no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world." That very often is how it happens, isn't it? People hear some things about Jesus, and we've had a wonderful experience because of our obedience to the gospel. And so we go out and we tell someone, "We found him. You know, we know about Jesus, and here we're going to tell you all about the Messiah." And at first, they're kind of impressed with what we say, and we can tell them that some things have changed in our lives and everything is different. And so they get kind of excited, and they listen to what we have to say about Jesus. And then later on in their own faith journey, they can say, very effectively, they can say, "It's not because of you. It's because of my own contact with the Lord that I believe that He's the Son of God. At first, you know, it seemed like just what you were saying, but now it's about me. It's what I've seen." And then in another episode, is over in John chapter 11, you've got people who have come for a different reason entirely. And they've come to the house of Mary. In John chapter 11, Lazarus dies. And they bury him, and Jesus intentionally delays his arrival until Lazarus is dead and buried. And then he comes and raises Lazarus from the dead. And in verse 45, when someone died in the ancient world, they had very elaborate, kind of complicated mourning rituals. These were very customary kinds of things. And so a lot of people have come to the house and they're offering whatever comfort that they can. But the necessity for that has gone away. Lazarus is raised from the dead. And so there are all these people who have come for a different purpose entirely, but they see that Lazarus is raised from the dead. Verse 45, "Therefore many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did put their faith in him." Well, that's the sort of thing to get your attention, wouldn't it? Raising someone from the dead. Doesn't happen every day. So anyway, you have these episodes in John where someone has, because of a relationship, someone has been introduced to Jesus. And everything changes because of that. Relationships are very, very strong. And then you have these two episodes that I talk about in Acts and Acts 16. We've got two separate things going on. It plainly says that Lydia and her household obeyed the gospel. They were baptized. And then in the same chapter, you have the Philippian jailer who is baptized and his household too. You know, they're all there. So what is happening doesn't just happen to one person, but it actually happens to the entire family. And household in the ancient world was bigger than just immediate family or even extended family. It would also include household servants, hired retainers, and things like that. So there's a lot of people involved in each case. You can take a look at those episodes and realize what's happening there. What we see in common in all of these things is the importance of existing relationships. You have people who already have some bond with each other, either family or friends or something like that. See, sometimes just neighbors, like the woman in Samaria. And so suddenly then, these people can be introduced to Jesus because of an existing relationship. It's already there. Relationships are wonderfully important to bringing someone to Christ. I want to quit here just for a second, offer you an opportunity to shoot me a comment or a question. Anything you'd like to say or relate about? Can you think of any others that didn't pop into my head when I was thinking about this? Other relationships where people were brought to Christ or brought to faith because of this? We need incoming coffee here, don't we? Yes, sir. Serving some really strong stuff. Wake everybody up. Okay, well, we'll just press on then, because we do want to talk about how important relationships are. And sometimes the importance is just kind of overlooked. It's like the air we breathe. It's all around us all the time, and we never really think about it. These relationships are already there. George Barna, I've got some statistical junk here. George Barna said that 50% of the people that he surveyed said they would, in fact, be offended if a stranger walked up to them and tried to talk to them about faith issues, faith matters. And you kind of know that for yourself, right? How many of you have been approached by a stranger, someone just out of the blue, comes to you and tries to talk to you about faith matters at all? Okay, how'd you like that? Did you enjoy that? Didn't think they knew what they were talking about. They didn't know the truth. Well, that could be exciting, couldn't it? You knew the truth and they didn't know what... Okay, I'm getting the sense from you that it wasn't a pleasant experience for you. Okay. You can have some fun with them once in a while, and you can try to expose them to a new concept, but you know, they typically people who come to you, and you correct me if I misunderstand this, but typically people who come to you think that this is a one-sided conversation. They're going to tell you something. They are not interested in hearing anything that you may or may not have to say. Am I right about that? Okay. Now, if you don't like that, why would we ever assume that someone else will like it if we come to them with that same kind of one-sided approach? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Okay. 50% of people are offended if a stranger tries to talk about faith issues, but that same group of people was not offended if a friend or family member came to them and talked to them about faith issues. You know, part of that is because... Yeah, go ahead. Wow, every Saturday, noon, 1 o'clock, he's preaching on a street corner in Tecumseh.
Yes, and there would be a certain number of people that would come and be around him. Of course, I was a younger guy. I'd listen. But I always respected him that he had that desire.
Okay.
And I always, he never offended me.
Okay. He's not phony. Okay, you can see this man has real conviction. He's there every Saturday. Okay. And you may even have seen something in the rest of his life during the week that led you to suspect that he lives a consistent life. He tried to do what he said was right.
But that's not done today. I don't know whether you even could.
Oh, yeah, you can. I don't. I'm sorry? Stands out on the corner. What? Sid, did she give up on you and move to Shawnee with her message? I've seen her also at different intersections, and I think that's another situation where you kind of have to respect the person's convictions. May not be the correct message, but you have to respect the person's convictions. So anyway, the point here is that these same people are not going to be offended if a close friend or relative brings the same kind of issue. A guy named Charles Arne, these are church growth gurus, he released some statistics that talk about why certain people decided to attend a particular church group. And this is not specific Churches of Christ, this is just anybody, any church group. 11 to 26% of the time, they offered any other reason. It could be anything, and they had a whole list of reasons. But 75 to 90% of the time, he said their attendance was due to an invitation by a friend or a relative. Isn't that amazing? That by far is the big indicator. Now, having said that, I also want to point out that Tom Rainer, whose statistical research I think is maybe a little more precise. He says it's not quite that rosy a scenario, but it's still going to be in the 50 to 75% range that attend because of a relationship. But he also says about relationships, we just kind of want to know the truth and just keep all this in perspective a little bit, right? There's no magic formula here. We just want to keep all this in perspective. He says, number one, relationships are indeed important in bringing someone to Christ. You have already a bond there and people tend to trust you and so on. He says relationships are not the only explanation for a person's obedience and commitment to Jesus. And I know that that is true also. Relationships can be very important. But how many of you have talked to, we'll do another poll here. We're doing our own statistical research. How many of you have talked to a friend or family member about faith issues and it has produced no sign of any obedience or desire to follow Jesus? How many of you have done that? Okay, so we know it's not just the relationship that makes that happen. There are a whole cluster of issues about that. And we'll talk about all that, too. He also points out, Tom Rainer points out, that sometimes God works without any relationship in evidence. I mean, people come to faith in Christ and they don't have any family members in their background or friends who have invited them to come and hear. There's no Andrew or Philip in their lives that's come to get them. Number four on the reverse side of the page, of all the relationships possible, family relationships are more powerful than friendship relationships, and of all the family relationships, wives are the most influential relationship in bringing their husbands to the Lord. And we don't even have to take a poll there, do we? We got enough examples in this room of men who have been brought to faith in Christ because of the faithful activity of their wives. And that may be something we need to pay better attention to, honestly. Maybe we need to talk to some women who are faithful Christians and their husbands are not, and try to sit down and determine what we can do to help that man move one step closer to Jesus. I mean, he's already got a strong vested interest in a Christian life. So maybe we ought to do a little bit better job with that. In connection with that is the rest of the page. Okay, first of all, anybody have anything you want to say about relationships or the importance of relationships? Or y'all are so easy to get along with today. It's just amazing. Had a little too much eggnog yesterday. Still kind of drowsy. There's an author named Lee Strobel. And he was a journalist in Chicago and a very ungodly man by his own admission. And he is a member of a denominational group now and a very strong advocate for them. And he's written some very interesting things. Because of his journalist background, he has a good way of expressing himself and writing some of these things. But he talked about his own experience when his wife started attending a church. They'd never been a part of their family before, and all of a sudden, a friend of hers, here we go with this relationship thing, a friend of hers invited her to go to this church group, and she started going, and wonder of wonders, she liked it. And heard some things that were really helpful to her, and they were having some challenging struggles in their lives, personal kinds of struggles, not really marriage weakness, but they were just having some personal struggles. And so she started going to this church group and hearing some things that were completely different, and it threw his whole world into turmoil. And we sometimes don't think about this. You know, one of the early charges against Christians is that they were home wreckers. Christians were accused of being home wreckers because these preachers would go out and one spouse would obey the gospel, the other would not, and it creates an immediate tension within this household. And things, you know, the friction just gets hotter and hotter and hotter sometimes. They don't find a way to balance these things out and work together. So here's the situation right here now in this guy's life. First of all, he says he was hurt by her involvement in the church because He thought she was constantly comparing him to all these real nice, good people in the church, and he's always going to come up short on that deal. Because you can always fix it in your mind. This is one of the problems that we have always, I think. The visitors come in, they don't have a church involvement, don't know much about us. They walk in and we say, how you doing? They say, fine. How are you doing? We say, fine. And they look around and they say, man, everybody looks fine. You know, they're all clean and combed and pressed and polished and everybody just seems happy and I'm a mess. And these people wouldn't like me if they knew who I really am. And the problem is they don't know who we really are. You know, they don't see the struggles and problems that we have. And they just presume that everything's fine with us. Well, he's hurt by her involvement because he is seeing them in that way. He thinks that they're all perfect and he's a mess. And so she comes home after being there for a couple hours with all these perfect people, and she comes home and looks at him, and although she didn't actually do it, he assumed that in her mind she's rolling her eyes and heaving a deep sigh. Here we go again. Well, second thing is he felt manipulated into attending services with her. She would invite him to go and he would go, but he'd be mad about it. But he thought, he was afraid that if he didn't go, you know, there's something really important going on in her life and she's just going to keep moving farther and farther and farther away from him. So he wanted to kind of hang around and see what was going on, not let her get too far away. But whatever's happening, he doesn't like it because he feels like it's all arm twisting. He didn't really want to be there. It was not his choice, but he can't afford not to be there. Then he also said that her values all of a sudden didn't match his values. And this was a real problem because she wants to give money to the church. Well, that hadn't been a part of their budget in the past. And all of a sudden, she's taking this household budget money and she's doing something with it that they didn't really discuss or agree on. And then there's the whole time issue thing, too, because here she is with this unreasonable demand to be in worship services on Sunday. You know how many weekends that fouls up? All of them. Can't go to the lake for the weekend. You've got to get back for church. Can't take the trips. Even on the long holiday weekends, you know, you get Monday off, but that's no good because you've got to be back for church on Sunday. So, whole thing's messed up. How many of you have wrestled with those same kinds of things? Oh, yeah. You know exactly what he's talking about, right? And then, bottom line, I mean, honestly, he really didn't know where this was taking her. And he didn't know if she was going to shave her head, dress in a bed sheet, and go down to the airport selling books or what. You know, I mean, this could be bad because he didn't know. Had all these kinds of strange ideas about who Christians are and what they do, but, oh, man, have no idea what's really going to happen. How dangerous is this? So this was a very anxious time for him. You'd have to be completely insensitive not to realize that this guy is expressing the truth. And there are a lot of people who get nervous when their family members start coming to faith. Because they don't know where this is going. They only know that it's uncomfortable. I do think that it's a really good thing for us to remember that when Andrew went and got Peter, Andrew didn't know where it was going either. Peter didn't know where it was going. Andrew didn't know. When Philip went to get Nathanael, Philip didn't know where it was going either. This is a brand new deal. I wish sometimes we could just, for a moment, get the attention of people who are not Christians and don't have any particular religious feeling and just explain to them for a moment, look, when we confess that Jesus is the Son of God and we submit to baptism for the forgiveness of our sins, we have no idea where this is going. We have no idea. We're just along for the ride, and I promise you, it is going to be one exciting ride. It is not going to be what you expected. I'll tell you what, when I obeyed the gospel, I was a sailor in the United States Coast Guard and had no more thought of being a preacher than the man in the moon. I've been doing this for 20 years. I had no idea what God had in store for me. How many of you have gone in a completely unexpected direction in your life because you obeyed the gospel? Just think, how many of you have gone in a completely unexpected direction? You just buckle up and hang on. You don't know where this is going. It's going to be exciting. You're going to do some things that some other people would just roll their eyeballs at. We had a lady in Michigan who decided to go on a mission trip. She'd never been on a mission trip before. She's in her 40s. Her mother was in her 70s. And her mother was a faithful Christian. She was a faithful Christian. She's going to go on a mission trip, and her mother tried to talk her out of it. Didn't want her to go. That's a little bit too thrilling. Her comment was, "They'll bring you home in a box." She was serious, too. "They'll bring you..." They didn't. She came back all safe and sound, healthy, didn't even get a stomach upset. "They'll bring you home in a box." Hey, look, they might. We have no idea where we're going. But the Christian life is one exciting ride. And it's perfectly natural and normal. Yeah, we're going to show some pictures. You're talking about the trip that the group took to Turkey and Greece and Rome. We're going to do that in a couple of weeks. Yeah, I know the ladies are getting a preview back there in a Wednesday night ladies class, and they're having a real good time with that. But I'm going to show some slightly different pictures, and we're going to go a little farther, faster than they have more time to do more stuff. But yeah, I'm going to do that probably the second Sunday evening in January. First Sunday evening in January is the area-wide teen gathering. So we're going to host all those teens here. Probably the second Sunday evening we'll do. I'll show you.